Hello and welcome to Sri Lanka 99.94 Cricket Every Day. My name is Mark Machado from the Murali End, and I'm joined as always by Estelle Varzi-Devon from the Papere. We are going to take a look back at Sri Lanka's T20 World Cup. You're listening to Sri Lanka 99.94, your new home for Sri Lankan content. We'll be dropping into your podcast feed on YouTube and the 99.4 app several times every week. So please do rate, review, subscribe. Thank you for joining Cricket's Conversation. Estelle, we've got to start off, we've got to address the elephant in the room. Obviously, Sri Lanka's World Cup came to an end after their loss to England on what was Saturday morning for me, Saturday evening for Australia, Saturday afternoon if you were in Sri Lanka, on overnight, or when I woke up on Sunday morning, I woke up to the news that Dinesh Gunatilaka had been arrested on suspicion of four counts of rape. There's not a huge amount we can say about this now because it's an active court case. Obviously, it's a terrible way for this tournament to have ended for Sri Lanka. And, well, I should say, we'll be going into much more depth once we know what's happened and the case has been allowed to play out. There's no point in us speculating and, you know, telling us what we think, because we've just got to let the case play out now. We can tell you that I've woken up to the news. It's 6 o'clock in the morning here in London. I have absolutely no idea what it is in the rest of the world. But I've woken up to the morning that he hasn't been granted bail. So he'll be sitting inside some Australian jail cell till his court case is heard. And at that point, we'll discuss that and probably have a broader discussion at some point as well about indiscipline in the Sri Lankan cricket squad in general. Anyway, Estelle, Sri Lanka's tournament came to an end after a defeat to England on Saturday. At the innings break, it looked like we were going to get crushed. But it was actually a lot closer than it was going to be, right? And actually, Sri Lanka's total with the bat probably was only about 10 or 15 runs short. What was it like inside the stadium?
Yeah, the bowler somehow, I don't know, you know, managed to drag that to the last over. Like you said, at the midway point, you're not expecting that to happen. And not only the midway point, I mean, England were blazing away in the power play, 74, no loss. Alex Hales was going after the fast bowlers. It looked like, I'll be honest, I didn't think it'll even go to the last five overs. But, you know, the bowlers managed to pull things back and again kind of prove that the Sri Lankan side has got, the batters have let them down, but there's really something in that bowling attack that can do something in the coming years. But I think overall, if you're a Sri Lankan fan, it was a good game until the end. At least if you're neutral. But if you're a Sri Lankan fan, I think you would have been walking away from the SCG or away from your screens disappointed, not just by the result, but by the way Sri Lanka played, particularly in the first half.
I felt that game was a kind of microcosm of how Sri Lanka's tournament had gone. Everything that you expected, that we'd come to expect from Sri Lanka at this iteration of the World Cup, kind of came out to play. Sri Lanka started batting really well, and then they lost wickets, and they looked like they were in a really good position to go on and score big, and they need the middle order to come through and finish that game off for them, and they just weren't able to do it. They went from, what was it, about 113 at one point for three to 144 all out. Yeah. And you're just not all out, sorry, for the at the end of the innings. And that, for me, summed up Sri Lanka's batting this tournament. We came into it, we had massive question marks about who should be batting number three and number four. Well, those events, those positions now seem quite tied down. And we were expecting the middle order. If Sri Lanka were going to do anything this World Cup, they need the middle order to do what the middle order was going to have to do and be quite explosive and hit big runs. But it just never panned out that way. And then it was, we were kind of relying on the bowlers to get us back into the game. But ultimately, and you know, we can talk about how many bowlers are injured at the moment. But our bowling unit did quite well this tournament. Our openers did quite well this tournament. I think Pattam Nisanka's knock 67 was inspirational. Probably actually Shrunk's knock of the tournament, I felt. But it was just that lack of firepower that meant this was another game that we lost, right?
To be honest, you know, people talk, and I know I heard people saying how Mike Atherton was talking about the lack of power hitters in the Sri Lankan lineup. And I don't think that was the problem here. I think it was the intent. I know I texted you very frustrated about this as well, about the way Bhanuka Rajapaksha was playing in that game. Because for me, what was disappointing is that when you saw the way Mendis and Nisanka started, it was clear to me at least that one thing they knew that, you know, setting England 140, 150 was not going to be enough because England have a lot of firepower in that batting order. And secondly, what they wanted to do was just, you know, go after the bowling and get to as much as they can and then, you know, like get to a big total. That was the intent. I felt like the opener showed. It was almost like, you know, at least we die in, like, you know, attacking mode, right? If we fail, we...
In a blaze of glory.
Yeah. If we fail, we get bowled out for 120 or even less than 100. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter at all because we're already out. But if we do succeed, we are hitting somewhere like 170, 180. I think 180 was on the cards at one point. I do understand the pitch was not as easy as that. But it was just, for me, it was the lack of intent, particularly by Rajapaksha, which was disappointing. And this is, again, I think, you know, we've spoken about like why some parts of the way they play is disappointing is because we know what they're capable of and what their roles are. So Bhanuka Rajapaksha is not in the side to, you know, work the singles and bat till the 20th over. That's not his role, right? But it seemed like he had switched to that, you know, drag on until the, you know, end. Which was very strange to me because that's not how he played throughout the tournament. Sure, he didn't get a lot of runs, but at least that intent to kind of, he was trying to play the role he was picked to play. Sri Lanka don't need another guy who's trying to, you know, stick it through and bat till the end. But again, that lower middle order, disappointing in the sense they just, it's weird, right? Like you said, we were looking at who's batting at number 3 and 4 and thinking, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 are so, you know, they're in form, they're going to get you some runs. Just didn't work out.
Let's talk about the kind of mitigating circumstances around it, right? Because I think specifically on that game at Sydney, I think the ball got harder to hit as it got older. I think that happened to England as well, and I think that's how Sri Lanka basically got themselves back into the game. I think it was at the beginning of the innings, it was very easy to get the ball to the boundary, and as it got older, I don't think it was so much. I also think, you know, in the grand scheme of cricket, our team haven't played a huge amount of cricket in Australia as well. And also, I think even though, you know, our older players, our more experienced players, are actually in the middle order now, Bhanuka and Sharnika, they don't necessarily have a huge amount of experience playing outside of Asia as well. And I think these are all things that kind of came to the fore in that game, but also broadly in across the tournament as well. Kind of going into the tournament, me and you were looking for improvement on last year's performance. Last year, I felt they got themselves in positions where they could have won the game, could have won games against South Africa, definitely against England, and potentially against Australia as well. And they, for whatever reason, weren't able to do that. Compare and contrast that to this year, where the games that they've lost have been against New Zealand, Australia, and England. I actually, okay, against England, they kind of got themselves back into the game against all odds. and the school will look competitive. But really, I don't think at any point in that game, after about the 12th or 13th innings, sorry, over, not innings, 12th or 13th over, did they look like they were ever actually going to win that match. And that's what I think is quite disappointing from our perspective, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the numbers, they're going back with 4 wins out of 8 games, 50-50, whatever, right? But they've beaten every team you'd expect them to beat, minus Namibia, who they lost to. And they haven't, I wouldn't say, like, you know, really, even against New Zealand or Australia, at any point looked like they were bossing the game. You know, it was always, even against Australia, I know Stoinis hit a record 50, but you knew that 150 odd is not going to be a defendable total if Australia bat the 20 overs. The only way Sri Lanka is going to win that is if they bowl them out. So as long as, you know, they had wickets in hand, it was always going to be Australia's game. Similarly with England, right? That, like you said, even no matter how many wickets kept falling, sure, it was, I think, English people were nervous, the English fans. I know the English media was nervous. But, yeah, I don't think anybody else kind of expected any, you know, surprises there, which is what is disappointing. And I think we texted each other about it as well, right? Like, I need somebody who can be objective about this to tell me, is there such a huge gulf in skill between these sides? Because to me, there isn't, but I don't know. Now I don't know if that's just me, my bias. Because it seems like every time Sri Lanka faces one of these bigger teams, they just look at, like, you know, out of their depth in most periods during the game.
I obviously have to watch a lot of English cricket because I'm in England. I don't think, and, you know, I watch a lot of Sri Lankan cricket. As you say, though, it's very difficult to be objective about this, firstly because of my own bias, but also because I just don't see the two of the, you know, there's not a lot of Sri Lankan players playing domestic cricket in England, and there's obviously not a lot of English players playing domestic cricket in Sri Lanka, so it's hard to say. But I just don't feel that there's a big gulf in the skill levels or the talent levels or whatever you want to call it between the two sides. I think this England team are probably got more players in their prime than just about anyone else. Maybe India do. This England team has broadly been together for quite a long time as well, though. In terms of where they are in the cyclical nature of sports sides, they're much further down the track. I think if this England side don't win this tournament, I think they'll be a huge amount of disappointment, where I think Sri Lanka coming out of the group stages with 4 points is probably where most people thought they were going to be. Obviously, I fully envisage SLC having an inquiry into this and various people getting sacked, and will no doubt get several new coaches will be appointed, and some coaches will lose their jobs, and, you know, who knows what will happen in Sri Lanka. Around the Sri Lanka setup, but there you go. Where I think Sri Lanka just lack that maturity sometimes against the bigger teams. I do wonder if this tournament was in Asia, if it was back in the UAE, or if it was being held in Bangladesh, how different the results would have been. Where on pitches that we're used to batting on, and pitches that kind of suit our bowling. But, you know, I think ultimately, it's, as you say, it's not necessarily the power hitters, but we're not setting ourselves up with a total that we can defend easily. And I think until we can do that regularly, I think we just need to be looking to chase games, because I think chasing, I know for some sides it feels less sophisticated, but I think for just where we're at in terms of where our batting's at, I think it helps us set the pace a bit and know what we've got to do. And maybe that's the way we try and beat the bigger sides, at least, when we're away from home. But yeah, I don't, you know, in terms of raw skill and talent, I just don't think that there's a huge gulf there. I do think there's a mental hurdle that is slowly being built after years of being a side that was dominant. All the players that were helping us, that got us over these difficult situations, are gone now. We've got to make sure that this hurdle doesn't, you know, arrive in our minds where we aren't able to beat the more established cricket sides outside of Asia, because I am starting to worry about that a little bit.
But when it comes to, like, you know, conditions, right? I don't know. Can we say that most of those dismissals were caused by, like, the conditions? I felt like a lot of the times it looked like, and we spoke about this before in our previous episodes also, like that whole, you know, something happens suddenly and everybody loses focus and kind of they're on autopilot all of a sudden, not really showing any intensity. I felt that was a bigger factor. I don't know if, obviously, conditions were a lot harder a lot harder because they're obviously not used to that, those kinds of conditions. They have played in the UAE quite often, so last year that might have helped as well. But I did feel like, particularly in those games like the one against Namibia, New Zealand, it wasn't, I don't know, was it the bowling or like the conditions, or was it just, you know, just mindless batting sometimes?
So I think with the batting, like, I want to talk about the bowling later on in the show, right? But let's talk about the batting. I think that's when I talk about the psychology of it, I think the just when you're at home, right? You see, I'm gonna compare it to batting in Colombo or Gaul, actually, because that's probably Sri Lanka's like favorite place to play cricket in Sri Lanka, right? When wickets start to fall, if you're a batter sitting there waiting to come out, you can probably recall 4 or 5 times when you've gone out there and you've smacked that ball about and it's done everything you want it to do. When the ball's pitched down, when the ball's about to bounce, you know pretty well where it's going to pitch up to, and you're confident in yourself. You hear time and time again when international cricketers retire, professional cricketers retire from all parts of the world, they talk about how much it's in your head, right? And how much of it is getting the head right. Suddenly, you're transported to the SCG or MCG, you're in Perth, and you're a million miles away from home, and everything is unfamiliar. And, you know, well, I was probably, I think, in almost every game Sri Lanka played in Australia, Sri Lanka fans outnumbered the other team fans, apart from maybe when they played Australia in this tournament. But nothing feels normal. And then suddenly it's how do you mentally cope with that pressure, right? This brings me on to, you know, something that you were talking about Barnika Rajapaksa on Twitter going into the tournament saying he wants to be player of the tournament, right? And that he needs to show that intent. And actually now you look back on it and it sounds arrogant and it looks out of place because, you know, sadly the poor guy didn't score anywhere near the number of runs we were expecting, didn't get anywhere near the top of any ranking sides or anything like that. But that's the kind of intent that I think you've got to kind of go out with, and you've got to really believe in yourself.
Yeah.
It's like the best example I can give of this is, and obviously this is sadly becoming a historic example in Sri Lankan cricket, is Kumar Sangakkara's quest for 100 at Lord's. Mm-hmm. Right, where he does all the work beforehand and absolutely no one's doubting that he can do it. It's just getting him to that place on time, basically, and all of us knowing it's going to happen. And that's kind of the position, that kind of elevated state of batting almost, that some of our players can get themselves to in SL and close to home. But then it's when they go abroad and everything's foreign and they're having to stay in these hotels.
And the food doesn't have any spice in it.
Exactly. How can you be expected to go and have a put in a good innings when they haven't seasoned the chicken the night before? Like, I was going to swear that. I'm not even sure if we're allowed to swear in the Kimberverse, and it's too early to say any bad words. So I think that those are the, you know, when you talk about the psychology of it, I think those are the hurdles. And then you compare that to, you look at, you know, Hasaranga, who me and you are so frustrated with his batting, and then compare that to what, like Ben Stokes, who's coming in about the same place as him in the England team. I know he's not. Ben Stokes coming in slightly. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying, right? Somebody who's expected, like Liam Livingstone, who's gone around the world several times and done it several times, played everywhere. He doesn't care if his food isn't spiced or not. And, you know, everything feels familiar to him. And I think that's the what Sri Lanka needs to try and work on in the next kind of 18 months or so, is getting these players into the right mental... the mental side of the game, because I think that's where it's not quite happening. You know, we've even talked about, you know, do they need to bring a sports psychologist
they
in?
They do. I think that's one of the things that they're seriously lacking, because, you know, this is professional sport. It's no longer just about getting out there and hitting the ball or whatever, right? There's so much else that goes on with it. And I was talking to the fielding coach, Anton Drew, just before the England game, and he was talking about how following the Afghanistan game, the camp was pretty low. They were because they know they're out, right? They know they're not in the tournament. But just before the England game, the mentality seemed to be, you know what, we're going to give our best, we're going to go out on a high, which was what was great to see. You saw that when Kusal Mendis and Pathum Nisanka came out there, right? I know I was one of them as well, expected Mark Wood to really, you know, really, really trouble the Sri Lankan batters. They took him for 17 off the first over. They didn't look like in any trouble against pace, and he was hitting one. I think he hit 152 at some point in that over as well. I know he finished with 3 for 26, but that first over, the intent they showed was a direct kind of reflection of how they had built into that game. And then to see it kind of go the other direction was strange. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about, that kind of the whole drilling of, you know, the mental side of things. How do you get out of a situation like that? How do you push through a situation where you know the confidence is down? A similar thing happened against New Zealand, right? When Pathum Nisanka dropped that catch, you could see Hasaranga is on his knees. People, they've got their hands on their hips. The body language went completely like in a negative direction, right? So how do you pick yourself up from there? Those are skills that you learn. You can learn if you do have someone helping you from on that side of things. I think I've been saying this for years. I think Sri Lanka definitely need to bring in somebody, and hopefully somebody local, to deal with that side of things for the team.
It's if you understand the Sri Lankan mentality, which I assume everyone at SLC does, because largely they are Sri Lankan, you've got to bring a local person in, because if you've worked with sports psychologists, and I've had to do that in the past, you kind of have to open up to them. Mm. But more than anything, they need to understand your background, right? So you basically spend your first few meetings with them just telling them everything about every aspect of your life up till that point when you've got to where they are, and then they have to kind of get into it. And me and you, Estelle, can both say the whole Sri Lankan mentality is basically just saying yes and nodding your head and going along with everything, even if you don't fully agree with it, even if you don't fully understand it. But if there's a, let's be brutal about it, if there's an older white man asking you these questions, you'll just say whatever you think he wants you to answer. That's why it needs to be a local.
Yeah, and I also think language. It needs to
be a local person.
Language is another issue, right? Like, sure, these guys can understand basic English, but, or some of them, you know, at a better level. But they should be able to communicate in whatever language they feel most comfortable in. And I don't think that is English for any of the players in the squad at the moment. So they definitely need to look at a local option. And translating or, you know, helping out in that way, I don't think will help. It just has to be an environment where they can really, you know, express themselves.
Let's take a short break. Let's come back and get even deeper into Sri Lankan's World Cup calamity.
You're listening to Cricket's Conversation on 99.94. Whatever your team, we have the show for you on podcast, YouTube, or on the 99.94 app. We have India, England, South Africa, West Indies, and now Sri Lanka covered. If you want to find us, the best way is to follow us on social media at 9994DM by downloading the 9994 app or Google 99.94 on podcast. We speak cricket.
Estelle, let's talk about the fielding, right? Because we won the Asia Cup, I thought, off the back of absolute gun fielding. And I think the fielding was something that was in our control, was, you know, and I was expecting good things of it. And it just, for various different reasons, it just wasn't as sharp as it needed to be. Again, you can talk about the pitches, Australian pitches. I don't know this because I don't actually know the size of it. I don't know how big that pitch was in Bangladesh that they were playing on. But the pitches felt bigger in Australia. Geelong, that was a weird shaped pitch. things were going down that shouldn't have been going down. The fielding wasn't as sharp. There's two things that I think Sri Lanka become reliant on. That's A, the ability to be able to hide fielders in the pitch. I'm just going to call him out here, as much as I love the man, but Bhanika Rajapaksa chipping the ball all off to Hasaranga to throw it in cost us a run. I mean, I'm not saying that would have won us the game, but it might have got us, you know, it would have almost definitely would have taken it to another ball at the end. But that just shows his lack of confidence in the field. I mean, he's a professional cricketer. He needs to be better than that. I've always felt, and again, I say this as a muggle, that if you're a professional cricketer, your fielding is one of the things that you should be able to guarantee is going to be good every game. And because you're in pretty much control of that. I also think just the sheer presence of Ashwin Bhandara in the side, in a way, is a bit of a problem, because it means that you know that he's going to field probably 18 out of the 20 overs. And I suspect that there's a bit of a scrum for whoever's going to come off for him. Because suddenly you never feel a niggle like you feel a niggle when it's when you're fielding, right? And even though he is a gun fielder, I just think it's kind of a bit it's not unfair, because he obviously enjoys it, and you know it's not the ideal role, but it's a role nonetheless to play. But I've just got this impression, and I don't know, you know what. I have absolutely no reason to believe this, but I do. I imagine that there's probably people in the innings break asking if they want to come on for him, right? Him to come on for them.
I don't know about that, but you're right about the hiding fielders thing. And so I've been to pretty much every pre-match, like day before the match training session so far, and they've had a couple of fielding sessions. And I'm going to be honest, you can see the guys who don't want to be there. You can tell, right? You can tell, like, okay, Mahesh Dixon is not the most athletic fielder out there. Not everyone's going to be athletic. But what I do see in him is that particularly...
That in itself is an oxymoron though, Estelle, right? If you're a professional, I understand that there's the most athletic player in the team, and then there's the 11th least athletic player in the side. But Sri Lanka is pretty much the only country in the world that's consistently had put players out there. And the people around it, which includes me and you at this stage now, just go, well, these people are the least athletic people you can imagine.
I was going to say that at least when he's in the field, you can see he's giving his utmost to kind of do whatever he can. But, and I won't name names, but I think you will be able to guess who I'm talking about. There are some guys in there who, if the ball is falling between two fielders, you know he's not going for that catch. Right? So those things, like you said, you know, no, you can be the best bowler in the side. You can be the best batter in the side, but all 11 have to field. So you have to get that standard up. And I think what actually may have hurt Sri Lanka is, and if you look at the catches, I think I did a count yesterday. It was 8 catches in 8 games. If you look at the catchers, most of them have been dropped by some of Sri Lanka's better fielders. You've had Bandara drop a catch. Nisanka, obviously, the most kind of the one that pops into your head right away. Dasun Shanaka, I think Dhananjay De Silva. So they are your better fielders. But I wonder if having to hide these certain players, right, and which was made worse by the fact that Chamira and Madushankar were ruled out. Those two are good in the field. So without them, then you're having someone like Binura Fernando, who I don't think was even 100% fit. So, you know, you had to kind of hide him in the field, not just him, a couple of others. I wonder if having to hide them means then some guys are running from long on to long on or mid-wicket to mid-wicket or whatever, from one boundary to the other, did in fact in the end affect them to the degree where they were dropping catches. I don't know. That's just something I'm throwing out there. But we have to find a way that you one player who is like Chris Gayle, you can hide, okay? He's Chris Gayle. You can hide him, right? We don't have players like that. So you have to work on your fielding. You have to be, there should be a baseline for everybody. And if they don't meet that, then there needs to be extra work done with them. Because you can't, like, you look at England. I was just thinking this as I was watching the game the other day. Every time the ball went up in the air, you know they're going to take that catch, right?
Yeah.
But the same can't be said about Sri Lanka. So that's a big problem. If you're playing at the same level and you want to compete with these teams, then that can't be the case going into a World Cup in particular.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I found it deeply, deeply frustrating. And, you know, I think you look at the Binura Fernando thing and I think it was clearly just, you can tell from the way he was running around the field that he just wasn't fit enough to do it. And then, I do have some sympathy for them. Look, I'm a larger guy. I don't want to be out there fielding, but, you know, it's just part of the job, isn't it? There's aspects of your job that you got to do that you don't like. And I suppose if you're an international superstar batter, then the aspect might be is that you've got to get yourself ready for fielding, right? Though, you know, what I will also say is, you know, we do have some of the best fielders as well. You know, I've mentioned Bandara and I think, you know, Charmica and even Hasaranga are really awesome fielders as well. We just need to raise the bar and raise the standards. And I think that is something that we can control. And therefore, it's something that we need to look to do. Let's take another break. And when we come back, let's talk about something a bit more positive, which is definitely our bowling.
If you love the language of cricket and want more, then head over to the 99.94 app. And you can hear all of our podcasts and cricket commentary. We're adding new shows all the time and covering cricket series from all over the world. Be the first to hear all of our announcements by following us on social media at 99.94DM. Welcome to Cricket's Conversation.
So Estelle, Sri Lanka with the bat were an abject failure this tournament. The thing that kept us in games and kept games going on to the death was our bowling. I think in our two spinners, and I know Hasaranga had one bad game, but Dick Sharma, this was really his kind of coming out moment, wasn't it? I felt this tournament. He's been around the team for over a year now. He's got his IPL contract. I suspect he might end up being a mainstay for the Super Kings for a number of seasons. And there was a bit of me going into the tournament thinking that maybe if all our pace options were fully fit, then maybe he won't play. But my gosh, I don't know if he heard that little bit.
I told you, there's no, like, how do you leave him out? Anyway,
I think he just came through this tournament, didn't he? And he firmed his place up probably for the next two or three years, I'd imagine. He was absolutely superb. I'm just going to go out and say it now. He was my player off the tournament for Sri Lanka. I absolutely love him. I think he causes loads of issues for the opposition, even if he doesn't necessarily pick up as many wickets as Hasaranga. He more or less, he's not, I don't think he'll ever be as expensive as Hasaranga, because I think in a way, at this moment in time, and this will change during his career, I think he's the player that the most they fear losing their wicket to the most. He bowled the pretty much at every period of the game for SL as well. And just very difficult to get away. I think he's very difficult for them to pick. I love his action. The only thing I will ask is if he could some in any which way improve in his fielding. I think he'll be an amazing player. And you've got me excited, Estelle, because you've said that you've seen him hit sixes in the net. So I'm excited for what the future might hold for him as well. And, you know, Hasaranga, I don't know, he's pretty much our one bona fide superstar at the moment. He's the player that everyone else who doesn't know much about what's going on in Sri Lankan cricket's talking about. And he, you know, as I said, he had one game which he wasn't at his top format, but every other game he more or less, you know, he almost got us back into it in that England match. Well, not almost, he did get us back into it in the England game. So those two, I think, I mean, I don't know, you have to go back to kind of probably the late 80s, I think, to last time Sri Lanka didn't have really good spinners. Our pace options kept falling apart, kept breaking down, and we kept bringing new players in who, again, I don't think really disappointed us. I mean, you could go back to that, you know, the over that Badura Fernando breaks down in, but that, again, was kind of outside of his control. I think every single game, Lauru Kumara got stronger and stronger and stronger. And I think it's just a case of putting a bit of confidence behind him and him being able to pick up, you know, getting more confident and finding more and more form off the more games he plays. I think our bowling at the moment is definitely our strength. And it's just a shame we weren't really maybe able to get the scores that they needed to defend. Probably always, if we batted first, 20 or 30 runs short, we just weren't able to chase down totals, right?
Yeah, and to me, like, one of the biggest positives, and I tweeted about this as well, was Kumara. Because, you know, he gets a lot of shit on social media. He gets a lot of, I mean, people talking about how wayward he is, whatever, right? I've said this, I know I've said it many, many times. There's nobody like him in Sri Lanka cricket, right? There's nobody who's hitting that kind of pace, who can hurry the batters like he can. And we saw what he can do in this tournament. And what was good to see was that he seemed, like you said, to get better with each game, to get stronger. He's coming off a 7-month injury layoff, right? So that's not easy in itself. And I think the last time he played, it was test cricket. It wasn't even limited over. So just, you know, coming in after a break like that, not playing the first game. So probably you would think his confidence was a bit low because Pramod Madhusudan was preferred over him in the first game. But to come in and then perform like that, I think took a lot of character from him because he gets, like I said, he gets a lot of flack. And all of this stuff, it reaches players, right? Whether it's on social media or whatever, people talking about it. So he was very impressive to me in that he's still very young. And I think that's one thing that people don't talk enough about. Mahesh Dikshan as well, he's, what, 22 years old, right? Yeah. He's already bowling like someone who's been playing international cricket for years and years. So that kind of maturity which we saw from Kumara was very heartening to see. I only wish, like, if only we'd had him get to play regularly since the last World Cup, I wonder what we could have seen here in Australia. Because he was impressive there, had one bad over against David Miller, and then, you know, everybody thought, you know, forget this guy, you know. He can't keep calm under pressure. But I wonder what could have been if he just managed to kind of stay fit in the last 12 months and come into this tournament with a lot of game time under his belt. You know, he could have been amazing for Sri Lanka. Hopefully, I hope the next 12 months are good for him injury-wise, and he gets a good run in the Sri Lankan limited over squad, and kind of then we can really see the best of him. Because I don't, he was nowhere near his quickest here. He wasn't hitting 150, right? He was not, I think even when he, that spell against Australia where he hit Glenn Maxwell on the chin, he was at 140 something. So he's not at his quickest, but he's still, you know, really pushing the batters on the back foot. Maybe a little bit of fear into their heads as well. So I'm really hoping the next 12 months, at least leading up to the ODI World Cup, that he does get a lot of game time and he stays injury free. We get to see what he's really capable of.
Obviously, it all depends on injuries and, you know, how soon players can recover. But we've got quite an arsenal. And, you know, this hasn't happened by design. It's happened almost because it's had to happen by necessity. We've got quite an arsenal of seam bowling options at the moment, right? Because even Kasun Rajatha, who I've lost count how many players are injured and what position he is down the pecking order, but by God, you couldn't tell that he was seventh or eighth choice or whatever option he was, because I think he came into that side. It must have been really difficult to come in, and he just looked right at home at international cricket, and you're sitting there scratching your head going like, how is he, what, sixth choice seamer, right? And then we haven't even talked about our part-time options. You know, we did a whole episode on DDS. He ended up having to bowl out. I wonder if management possibly regret not playing Jeffrey van der Say as that kind of fourth seaman option. We saw Asalanka had to take it over, which was, I think he did all right, considering he's not even part-time. He's a quarter-time bowler at best. And then I still
he
think...
He and DDS make is, one complete bowler.
Exactly. and then... But I love that, though, because that's that fighting spirit that we want to see. That's that resilience coming through, right? And going, right, where can we get one more over of spin from? I was looking down his scorecard thinking, I wonder what he... Can he bowl spin? Can he bowl spin? Can he bowl spin? Because generally in Sri Lanka, right...
Everybody can bowl something.
Everybody can bowl, right? Even wicketkeepers can bowl over there. We've seen that before. So,
I think Kusal Mendes has bowled in international cricket before.
Has he?
I think so.
He's definitely bowled at domestic cricket. I know that. has Pattan Masanka bowled at in domestic level as well?
I don't think so. No.
Who's the next one I thought might get go? But I do think kind of going forward, they need to figure out what is going on with... Well, Dustin Charmaker needs to figure out what's going on with his bowling and when he's going to bowl. And Charmaker as well. I think both of them actually ended up having quite difficult tournaments for different reasons. I wonder if the tournament was in Asia, if Charmaker actually wouldn't have made the side and if they would have put in a spinning all-rounder. I love Walala game, but he's obviously quite young. And I wonder if someone like him might have got the nod over Charmaker, though that said...
I don't think right? Times. You look at his, like, his last 6 months or his last 12 months in the side, you don't look at his record, because that doesn't reflect the kind of role he's had for the side.
It's the curse of finishing, right?
Yeah.
It's the curse of his role,
yeah,
isn't it?
And if you look at even the series against Australia in both the ODIs and the T20s just before the Asia Cup, he may not have finished as like the top wicket taker or the top run getter or whatever, but if Sri Lanka needed 20 off 10, he was getting those runs. If they needed a wicket between the 13th and the 15th over, he was getting that wicket. So he was fulfilling his role in the side. His stats may not reflect that, but he was fulfilling his role in the side in that way, which here, unfortunately, it didn't happen. And I don't know what it was, because, I mean, he still seems like his confidence is high. But maybe it's, you know, lack of opportunity. I don't know what it was, but nothing happened for him in this tournament. So I actually wonder if they would have kind of played somebody else in his stead, just because of the way he's proven himself. I think I was not a Chamika Karunaratne believer until like maybe 3-4 months ago, where, you know, in my perspective, he's done what they've required of him. So he's done his job. Shanaka, though, he's got some serious problems, I think, because I would think in these conditions, he would have thrived, because he's really good against pace, and he was coming in the 15th, 16th over facing pace bowlers. You'd think that he would have had a really good tournament, or at least an average one. He didn't even get 100 runs. I think I was just going through the records. Number 4 to 8 made 360 runs at an average of 12.85 and a strike rate of 104. And much of that is, I think, number 6, 7 and 8 who have not like done anything of significance with the bat.
Yeah, because the one thing that we do know is that there'll be some sort of inquiry into why we didn't win the tournament, and SLC will take some sort of action, as I alluded to earlier, whether that be changing. I don't think they'll change the coaching.
No, I don't coaching. Think that might be selection committee.
No coaching. And if that happens, then I think we might end up with a change of captain. I mean, I'll be honest. I'm just going on, not on what I want to happen, because I don't think that's necessarily the right time to do that right now. I think there's still, on the whole, a lot of positives. I don't think one tournament, or what essentially it's one bad tour, is the reason why you need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But we all know how much Shlunker like a change of captain. I think there's other people in the team who could potentially do it who haven't done it in the past. And I do think that puts Dustin into a difficult place at the moment, if that does happen, because I don't know how he ends up getting back into the side. But what I will say is there's not many players who you look at that. You know, I can think of two or three players for every other position, whether or not they're good enough for they're comparable to the person that they're replacing, their options. But I'm not sure there's too many other power hitters on the island who can play that role at this stage, and actually replacing almost anyone in that squad would really be, you know, you're probably going to end up picking someone much younger with much less experience, and then you've got to go through the whole cycle again with them, unless we go back to the dark old days between 2015 and 2019, where we just end up chewing out players every tour, right? Which I don't think any of us want to do. Estelle, let's kind of wrap it up over there. There's still lots more to dissect, which we will do in the coming few days. I picked out my Sri Lanka player of the tournament. You don't need to tell me now, maybe you can think about this, maybe it's something we come back to later on in the week. Who is your player of the tournament for Sri Lanka? Could you pick one of them?
I don't think so, but I'll think about it.
Okay, let's come back, because, you know, we're here every few days. So we'll come back to that later on in the week. Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka on 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please rate, review and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast, and tell all your friends and family about us. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazudev1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.